Як я ся добре маю, на горбачко кежу маю, гей-я-гой. Кежу маю на горбачко, гей-я-гой-я. Кежу маю на горбачко, серце на праїрочку, гей-я-гой. Кежу маю на горбачко, гей-я-гой-я. Кежу маю на горбачко,
We started that last set off with a vocal group from New York, Smetana. There's no L there. Smetana. Oihana was the name of the song that was off of their First Light CD. We followed that up with the Lemon Bucket Orchestra from Toronto, from their, I think it's their first CD, Cheeky. The name of the song was Tomokosa. Both of those songs are Ukrainian songs. And then we had a couple of brass bands. We had Rhea Brass Band from New York doing Bloody Knuckles off of This Train Is Now. And then a little more contemporary brass band sound from the West Philadelphia Orchestra, Arg, from Bathtub Jams. West Philadelphia Orchestra is one of my favorites, and they've been at Pittsburgh at least twice in Pawtucketonk, and I think once outside of Pawtucketonk, but they're a treat to hear. But one thing I will mention is that when we saw them most recently, it was in Johnstown. When was that? Last year? 2 years ago? I don't know. It was in Johnstown, and the personnel was almost completely different from when we had seen them a couple of years before in Pawtucketonk. A lot of these bands are what you might call community bands, where it is nobody in the band is just their main source of income. As a matter of fact, it might not be any income at all. So people kind of come and go, but good bands do a great job of maintaining their musical traditions through changes of personnel. That's not to say they don't get updated, as you just heard. Okay, I got to read one more thing. This is a fun one to read. I'm happy to read this, although it gets my appetite going. Spack Brothers Pizza joins you in supporting WRCT Pittsburgh. Spack Brothers Pizza offers pizza, hoagies, and wings while specializing in vegan and vegetarian alternatives. Spack Brothers Pizza uses no refined sugars, not any, in its sauce and unbleached flour in its dough. Spack Brothers is committed to safety during the ongoing pandemic by providing online ordering and payment, as well as contact-free pickup. You can learn more about online ordering at www.spackbros.com, and will receive a text message when your food is ready to pick up. For more information, you can call 412-362-SPACK, S-P-A-K, or visit their website at spackbrothers.com. That's 412-362-7725 or spackbrothers, S-P-A-K, .com. Yeah, we got two. Maybe they both work, but the first time it's spackbros.com, and then the second time reading through it, it's Spack Brothers. But you might want to try them both. Okay, and I will also tell you, if you are interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities. I'm going to say a word about the next song you're going to hear. The artists here are Eva Salina, she's the vocalist, and Peter Stan, he's on the accordion. This is a... the name of the CD is Sabina, and it is recordings of songs by that were originally done by a Serbian vocalist. I guess the reason I'm mentioning all this is you're also going to hear in this set Eva singing, doing the vocals on a Slavic Soul Party CD. So we got two little bits of Eva, who has had an interesting career with Balkan music. That's all I got to tell you for now.
Yek detarin Thank you. Oh, Ходимо, навчаємо, кацю, дати мерила, конче. О, пацу, бас, ходимо, навчаємо, і дай камерила, конче.
Okay, let me tell you what was what we played in that track. The last track was from Slavic Soul Party with Eva Selina doing the vocals, Opa Supa, which can be translated as have a beer. That was from their Technocheck Collision CD. Slavic Soul Party probably might be the only one of these bands that I know of, has a regular live gig in Brooklyn. So if you're ever in Brooklyn on Tuesday night, you can go hear Slavic Soul Party. Before that was our second song from West Philadelphia Orchestra, Rasenica Philadelphia. That was off their Tour de Philly CD. And we started the set off with Eva Selina and Peter Stahn. Peter was the accordion player doing Ave Navin Romain from Sabina. Romain? I don't know. I'm not very good with my Baltic languages, nor any other language other than English, but that's a whole other topic. Okay, you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM. It is 1 minute after 10. Normally, I would be turning the air studio over to Zombo, but Zombo is not here this week. So while I'm tidying up here, we're going to give you a bonus track. We're going to play something else from the Lemon Bucket Orchestra. The name of the song is Lume Lume, a very traditional Balkan song. It's off their CD of the same name. And thanks, everybody, for listening, at least those of you who could listen on the Internet. I'm sure that will be fixed in time. Well, be fixed shortly, I'm sure. But next week, we will be back live and on both the Internet and broadcast radio, so hope to see you then. I think what we're going to do next week is play local songs. There's been some local music piling up here that Kenny Joe would like to play, so that's going to be what's happening next Friday.
Thank you. innocuous. This could be anything. You know, I could just make up a name, but it's called the Extemporaneous Boogie with an X. Like Camille Howard. Getting some good requests in already. I've only got a...
Forbes Avenue is a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT, its members, or Carnegie Mellon University. Email questions or comments to pa@wrct.org.
Hello, you're listening to Forbes Avenue on WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM. I'm your host, Arshan Das, with my co-host,
Kate Smiggy.
And today we're going to be interviewing Max Gonzalez, also known as Gems.
Hi.
Max is a graffiti artist and muralist in Pittsburgh. He has a pretty interesting story. So I guess we'll let him lead it off. Tell us how you got into graffiti.
Yeah, so I am a full-time muralist, but I always make the distinction to say that I'm like first and foremost a graffiti writer. So like I have a very like graffiti, like traditional hip-hop lettering background. I'm originally from Southwest Side Chicago. I grew up painting there and just like seeing like graffiti everywhere I was from, because the neighborhood I'm from is Pilsen, and it's just like this very historic Chicano community that's just covered in graffiti. So I just naturally saw it everywhere I was. So even like as far as like starting to draw graffiti, like I don't even know how old I was, because I just was mimicking what I saw and what I thought graffiti was. I very much so have always had graffiti in my life. I didn't really start to like try to actually paint and get a name in graffiti until I was about like 15. I think like the first time I used spray paint though, I was like 13. Just coming from like a construction background and doing vandal type things with my dad and my brother. And yeah, from there, around like later in high school is when I started to actually really try to push it more, try to do pieces and things. But it really was when I moved to Pittsburgh for college and didn't have like parental control and kind of had free reign that I really, really started to push graffiti. So that was like age 18. I started writing Gems. Before that, I was writing all kinds of other things, but Gems is like really what stuck out to me. And just like being in a university format in a city that was unfamiliar to me and just kind of hating the college format I was in, I kind of didn't like to hang around a lot. So every night I would just go paint on things and put my name everywhere. So in a way, like me having graffiti was an access to like my upbringing to Chicago and kind of like that culture that I was brought up with. So being able to like export that to Pittsburgh and like just pull from that inspiration. But yeah, so the whole time through college, I was not doing graffiti as my art form for Carnegie Mellon, but it was still always there.
Yeah, so you studied at Carnegie Mellon, like we are current Carnegie Mellon students. A lot of times when you're around campus, you hear people talking about how the environment here is somewhat depressing or suffocating. Everyone has their own opinions on that. But how do you think the environment of Pittsburgh and Carnegie Mellon contributed to your art?
Yeah. If anything, it was kind of good that I had such a distaste for CMU, just because it forced me to seek like the actual Pittsburgh communities outside of the campus areas. Just because, I don't know, like coming from where I'm from, like I'm not poor or anything, but I come from a working class family and like work construction my whole life. So coming here and like even during school, like working two different jobs, like working at a restaurant and then like working construction during the summers, like I just couldn't really culturally attach myself to a lot of the other people here, where I was just seeing people who literally princes and princesses. And I was just kind of like, oh my God. And like, children of like CEOs, and it just like was very difficult for me to attach myself to that, especially coming from like Chicago and kind of loving the more city nitty gritty side of things. But yeah, so that did push me to eventually start looking into seeing the rest of the East End. So really, I've always like prided myself on like being very attached to the East End of Pittsburgh. So like East Liberty, Bloomfield, Garfield. From there, finding places like Time Bomb Shop, which used to be on Highland Ave, which is like a historic hip-hop graffiti store, and Daily Bread, and finding all those friends there. Thank you to CMU for pushing me away.
I think it's sometimes great on artistic journeys to to find inspiration from life and to find inspiration sometimes from those struggles that you face. And I feel like that's the uncomfortable part of the artistic journey. But when you're creating graffiti, what are you thinking about in terms of style and colors? Like, what do those artistic choices look like? Or do you come up with a design beforehand? Or
yeah, I mean, I would say there's definitely a distinction for me between like my graffiti and my muralism or spray can muralism. As far as graffiti inspiration, like letters, a lot of the inspiration for me does come from Pittsburgh. It wasn't until I moved to Pittsburgh that I had people who were willing to critique my style and tell me like that I sucked for the first time. And I was like, oh, wow, like I just assumed because I know how to draw, I must be good at graffiti. And it's kind of like, well, no, like graffiti is a typographic art form. It's based in lettering and this long history of hip hop. It even predates hip hop. And so I can't reinvent something that's already been mastered and that has this super strong history tied to it. It'd be wrong for me to reject the culture that it comes from young black and brown kids from New York and Philadelphia. Yeah, so I'm always looking to that as a reference point, like original subway graffiti, just wall graffiti. As far as like what I'm contributing to my style writing, and even in my murals, I try to push for there to be as much of a graffiti presence as possible. So any point that I get to introduce traditional graffiti styles into my art, I'd gladly accept it.
Yeah. It's interesting that you mentioned the different scenes that exist in graffiti from different cities. I wanted to ask you, what are some of the regional differences that exist between what you saw in, say, Chicago and here in Pittsburgh? And how does that influence your style?
Yeah, there absolutely is like a huge distinction between different cities' graffiti styles. Like I even said, like there's a little bit of a contention between who started modern style writing, whether it was Philadelphia or New York, but they both started around the same time in the late 60s. Philadelphia has a very, very distinct style for their, like, very tall, elongated letters. Even all of their, like, pieces look like that. It's called a style called Wickeds. And it's just, like, this very, very gestural style that you probably couldn't even read if you weren't from Philadelphia, where New York is known for, like, these rounder, more funky styles. Yeah, so and even being that Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, they're in the same state. Yes, they're opposite ends. It's just interesting to note that Pittsburgh does not have a Philadelphia style. Pittsburgh has a bit of his own style. Kind of with the advent of Instagram and the internet, styles have started to be diluted a bit. Philadelphia still has its style, but all the styles are kind of meshing a lot. The one thing with Chicago's style is that it actually kind of is very similar to LA's style because of a history of a Chicano and Cholo movement there, where a lot of the original graffiti from LA is referencing like old English styles, and a lot of gangbangers from back then would be riding in that style. So even before style riding was a thing that existed. So a lot of these almost gothic, pointy, like very aggressive looking styles of graffiti were present in LA, and being that there was a large movement of Chicano and Cholo people in Chicago and kind of like migration between the two places, they share that style. Where definitely, though, if you go to the south side of Chicago, it's a lot more noticeable, where the north side, it's just kind of like a contemporary mix of all styles. So yeah, like it's Chicago definitely would not have its style if it wasn't for the Mexican-American culture that's present there. Pittsburgh, being that it has zero Mexican-American culture, besides like me and two other people, it just like, yeah, it's just was more receptive towards like funky styles, but also like hardcore punk styles.
Do you think, is there anything about placement of the actual lettering that differs in cities, or is it just styles? Like, are there certain places where people tend to tag more often than others based off of regional differences, or have you not seen that?
Yeah, it definitely is a regional thing where, so even when I first moved here, I was like, oh my God, no one here paints rooftops really, where I love rooftops, and rooftops are super common in Chicago, where you just like climb up a roof and find a sidewall and like paint something up there. Where, yeah, I That was like one of my favorite challenges, is like finding a roof. And one thing I was taught by one of my friends is like, you can always find a way up onto that rooftop. Just like if you give up, then you failed. It's just like there's always a way. So it taught me to climb really well. I can't climb as well as I used to, though. But even if you go to New York or Philadelphia, a lot of box trucks are painted that hasn't caught on in other cities like Pittsburgh, just because it kind of would take an overnight shift of like everyone painting box trucks for it to not stick out like a sore thumb. So it's just kind of, people have always painted those. Pittsburgh doesn't have subway cars. We have the T, and that actually was painted once at one point, and everyone got arrested. Pittsburgh is actually a bit well known for its like freight graffiti, like freight trains. So it was like people like Prism, Nexky, others from that era, from like NSF crew, who started pushing freight graffiti super heavily. And unfortunately, because Pittsburgh's lost a lot of its industry, a lot of our freights have gone too. So we've definitely fallen from the ranks as being like a freight graffiti city, just because we don't have those surfaces quite as much anymore. But there still absolutely is that history there. Other cities, like if you go to like LA or Chicago, people love to wild out there, and people love to paint the fronts of like more corporate or franchised businesses. So like a Dunkin' Donuts or a Subway, or just kind of like a Motorola store or whatever, just kind of like blast it, and it gets removed very quickly. But it's just kind of like this more lawless, reckless style out there.
Yeah, so kind of on that topic, I would be interested to hear a little bit more about the legal challenges to graffiti and whether or not you think graffiti can be positive or negative for a community, and what are some of the effects of it?
Yeah, I mean, so sometimes people will bring up the argument like, is graffiti vandalism? And it's like, yes, absolutely. Of course it's vandalism. But I don't think vandalism is a disqualifier for something being art. Just because something is illegal doesn't mean it can't be art. If anything, a lot of art is born from illegal activities or what might have been illegal at that point. It would be best to tell anyone like, yeah, all laws are off and go paint whatever you want. But usually what the best situation for graffiti is when the graffiti writers and the community have a common dialogue. So the more that the graffiti writers can see themselves as a part of the community, the less they see themselves as the villain. So the more that the community says, you guys are the evil graffiti villains, and vilify that person, the more they'll say, yeah, you know what, I am awful and I'm going to ruin your day. There are unspoken rules in graffiti where it's like, don't go over places of worship, no places of education, no playgrounds, no cemeteries, not the front of anyone's house. It's a lot of times when you see people doing vandalism or what we call civilian graffiti on places that it shouldn't be, or that are like very destructive and inconsiderate to a community, it's typically not a person that is from the graffiti writing community. It's someone that is some kid or some adult or some drunk adult that is just out there seeking to destroy something in that one moment, and they might not ever do graffiti ever again in their life. So a lot of those incidents do give graffiti a bad rap. And really with graffiti, it's no one's out there thinking or saying, I want to go paint racial slurs or something like awful or make someone feel bad. It's, here's my identity. I've developed this name into my identity. I'm proud of this identity. Or even in Pittsburgh, a lot of the queer and furry communities have started taking up graffiti a lot. And I see that as like a very obvious sign of like agency over identity, where even for furry communities and queer communities, being a furry, that is agency over identity. Choosing a different name for a queer person, it's writing your own narrative and deciding how it's being told, and in what visual aesthetics it's being told in. Graffiti is just the same, where if I want to put up the name Gems Everywhere and I'm doing this very specific style, these very specific locations with the specific character, that's how you're wanting to be interpreted by the community. And even if you go back to the origins of graffiti, it really was disenfranchised youth who didn't see their voice out there in the world. And it graffiti's always been around. It always will be around. Even if you go back to caveman times, there's always been graffiti. Roman times, were always scribes into walls. And a lot of those scribes, you'd expect them to be some sort of romantic poetry, but a lot of them are just kind of like jokes and stuff like that. And like saying like, I don't know, Pythagoras sucks. And like, I guess that'd be Greek. But yeah, so it's just kind of like learning to have a community dialogue and opening up more spaces to graffiti or sanctioned graffiti spaces. And yeah, just people being less afraid of letters.
Going off of that, do you think there is a distinction between murals and graffiti, or do you think people make that distinction because of the way they see graffiti, trying to separate the two, even though they're kind of similar art forms?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of language in the world of graffiti that is kind of difficult to even understand, or even if you notice, I've been saying graffiti writer. When I'm saying graffiti writer, that's someone who does traditional hip-hop style writing. So you're writing your name on the wall. Where one distinction I make and a lot of graffiti writers make is that graffiti art typically is the form of graffiti that is done with permission or that's sanctioned, or it's a commission. So it can still be hip-hop letters, like it can still be your name, but it was just that it was done legally. Where graffiti... it sometimes gets like misused in the way that someone will call anything done with spray paint graffiti. And it's like, well, no, it's not like traditionally tying itself to style writing. Where some people see the term graffiti as an insult, and it's like, no, it's just like, it's just a style. Where one distinction I make is just like, I usually just refer to murals, or my murals as like spray can art murals, where it's just spray can art. And there's even a book from the 80s called Spray Can Art that is, I don't know, a good reference point too, just for learning a lot about graffiti. But even the term street art is very loaded. Street art comes after graffiti. Street art is actually a byproduct of graffiti and was made by graffiti writers. Where street art more so often refers to wheat pasting, stencils, and anything that's more kind of like a political statement, where in itself graffiti writing is a political statement in the way that you're saying that I have an identity, I don't want it to be constrained or constructed by the rules of markets or capitalism, I just want it to exist. Where street art more so is specifically about a specific political subject or social issue, but street art unfortunately has like been co-opted a lot. Where even if you think of people like Banksy, I don't see street art as always being done as like a pure intention. A lot of times you'll see someone even do something like a commentary on like stop the genocide in Gaza, and then they'll sign their name next to it, and it's like, why do you need to sign your name? It's a lot of co-opting, where even in my own case where I've done political graffiti in the past, I just don't sign it. It's just I'm doing it for the movement, for the cause, where then sometimes you'll see people like Banksy or similar to Banksy, they'll do something like that. And it's just like super vague, and it's just a lot easier for people to consume, and people more readily look at the super abstracted, like incoherent street art and think, yeah, that's the thing that's saying something, where they'll look at graffiti, style writing, hip-hop, and say, that's just trash, that's vandalism, where it's like, well, one of these here has a very pure intention of just saying, here's my identity, I want to be seen, I want to be understood this way. The other one's saying, ooh, here's some cool imagery that is provocative or interesting in some way, I don't know what I'm saying, or I do know what I'm saying, and I want it to be rewarding for me somehow, even though I'm capitalizing off of a social issue. So it's, very contentious within graffiti world.
Yeah, I can see it. So you used to be a graffiti writer, still are today, but you would spray paint unsanctioned graffiti writing and letters on places. Now you are also a professional artist and you are commissioned to do murals. What was that transition like from being a college kid painting gems to now getting paid for your art? Is there anything that you miss from the good old days?
Yeah, I mean, with graffiti writing, having my agency and over the name Gems is a bit freeing, obviously, where now since I was arrested for graffiti in 2017, I can't write the name Gems illegally in Pittsburgh anymore without it being tied back to me, and then I go to jail because I'm on probation for the rest of my life. As far as that transition, though, since I was arrested, initially I was looking at like 2 to 3 years and like $128,000 restitution, and I was just graduating college, and I was like, oh my God, like, this is going to ruin my life. I was kind of like, all right, I need to like make some money quick. So I started making some art pieces with Gems tags on them and things like that. And with this, I'm definitely not saying that like you need to be arrested and be a number one most wanted graffiti writer to start a mural career. It was more so like, okay, I owe a lot of money. I don't owe student loans, but I owe a lot of money. Better start making money somehow. I've developed this following. People know me as Gems, and I can't write that name anymore. All right, then I'll just start using the name in a way that still gives me control over it, but not as in a freeing of a way. But if anything, what really pushed me into muralism was that I had put so many years into learning how to use spray paint and how to use it very quickly and use it in pitch black, so that when I started to do
2 5 7 2 5 7 1 2 3 4 5 6 7 8 9 0 2 5 7 2 5 7 1 2 3 4 5 6 7 8 9 0.
You are listening to Chop Chop on WRCT.
They have made us into robots to show off in their coded walls. Human stores carefully programmed with electronic umbilical cords, stitches and screws fabricated and insulated by material microguts.